Republican Representative Don Pridemar of Hartford has announced that he will not seek re-election after 5 terms in the Assembly. He represents the 22nd Assembly District. Representative Pridemar, thanks for talking to Wisconsin Eye. Why have you decided to retire, sir?
Well, I'm old enough. I made a promise to my constituents when I ran the first time 10 years ago that I wouldn't spend more than 12 years in the Assembly. I figure if you can't get a job done in 12 years, then you should let somebody else give it a try. So that's what I'm doing.
In your announcement, you said you feel the Assembly is in, quote, good hands. You want to explain?
Well, with the leadership from the governor and with what we've been able to do the last couple sessions, I also made myself a promise that I would hope to get Wisconsin in the average tax range in terms of comparisons to other states. We haven't gotten there yet, but I think we're moving in that direction, and that kind of gives me hope that the people we elect in the near future here will keep that ball rolling and will continue to be a more attractive state for business and people, employees for those businesses. So that's, once we're moving in the right direction, I feel now is the time to let somebody with more youth, vigor, and energy than what I have right now to take over.
You mentioned the last couple of sessions. That would be the 11, 12, 13, 14. Mm-hmm. What are you proudest of as a member of the GOP that, ran the Capitol for those 4 years, sir?
Well, I did spend time in a minority over that 10-year period, so I know what it was like. It wasn't any fun. But I think I've been able to accomplish more of my agenda in the budget than I have in separate legislation. So part of the Act 10 were bills that I had offered in prior sessions, and the governor expanded on those and put them in the budget. I was kind of amazed at how far he did go with Act 10, but it all worked out well. And when you look at the numbers in terms of what we're asking state employees to give back, it's really modest in comparison to what the private sector is being asked to do. So again, that's a step in the right direction that had to be done, and it saved a lot of school districts in their budgets to continue offering classes that they may have, and personnel that they may have had to cut in the future with this action. So one of the bills that I did offer that I feel was part of Act 10 was a bill that I call the Freedom or Right to Work for Teachers. It would have allowed teachers to work in the public school without having to join a union and without having to pay union dues. So that idea was part of what Act 10 was all about. And I wanted to give teachers the freedom to be independent contractors if they so chose. The governor took that a little bit further than that, but obviously that's something that I felt very strongly at the time.
Well, Democrats say, and you've heard this over and over, 3 years later, that Act 10 has hurt public schools. You obviously don't think it has.
No, I don't believe that at all. It's helped with their budgeting, obviously. It does give teachers more ability to promote themselves. You prove your worth to an employer by doing a great job in the classroom. And I think this will allow the excellent teachers to continue to excel. And the ones that aren't so excellent, look for other opportunities because maybe that's not what they were born to do. So I think it's had a very positive effect. If you only look at the dollars and if you only look at what the teachers' union would want you to look at, then you'd have to say it did hurt teachers because we did take part of their paycheck away from them.
In the 10 years you've been in the Assembly, you've seen just an explosion in the options to the public schools. I'm talking about charter, choice, open enrollment, virtual schools, thanks for your help. Have all those been good choices, good options for Wisconsin school children?
I believe so. I think with almost everything, technology has changed things, and it's allowed, especially in the virtual school area, it's allowed technology to bring more resources to the individuals, and education is no exception. And I also strongly believe in competition. Without competition, we can't excel. Competition has made this country great, And I think competition in education is a key factor in improving education and allowing kids to, some of the kids that may not adapt very well to a public school setting, to allow them to adapt in a virtual or private sector type of school that they flourish, that they can flourish more readily in. And that's, I've interviewed a lot of choice students after graduation, and that's primarily what they brought to the table, is that freedom that they felt they weren't getting the attention they needed in the public school setting, and in the private school system allowed that to happen, and they were very grateful for that.
The current budget, as you know, put a 500 student limit on either first year of the budget and a 1,000 limit on choice outside of the mm-hmm. cities of Milwaukee and Racine. What do you, should that limit, should there be any limit in the next budget, Representative?
Well, a limit normally implies that we're not sure what's going to happen when we open the doors. And I think the choice program has proven over the years that it has been successful. And I think eventually all these caps will be taken off because people will come to the realization that the choice program works. Even people from around the more rural areas of the state are asking for choice. And I think eventually education will evolve into a voucher for every student, and they can take that voucher to any school they want. That would be the ultimate in freedom of choice mm-hmm. For school kids.
You made a decision to run for superintendent of public instruction. Mm-hmm. Why? What? Although you didn't win, what issues do you think you surfaced?
Well, I wanted to give, I guess, more conservative-minded people an option. I don't think we've had that to a great degree in past elections. I knew this was a long shot, but I also figured that because of Act 10 and because of some of the things we did in the legislature, mm-hmm. Because of some of the things, the partisanship that I felt was going on at DPI, the voting public needed a choice, and I was there to provide that. I didn't see anybody else coming up. I realized that DPI secretary has kind of a propagation list. In other words, people that normally run for that office have been in DPI or as assistant superintendents over the years, so there's a pecking order that seems to follow people that run for the office, whereas on the conservative side or the Republican side, there really isn't anything like that. So we have to rely on maybe finding a superintendent of a school district somewhere. But these people typically aren't politicians. They're not familiar with campaigning. They don't realize how much time it takes and how much travel you have to do. So as soon as I announced several of the candidates that they were considering running just dropped out right away because they weren't very confident in their skills as a campaigner. So that's the main reason I ran. And I thought the timing was right in terms of looking at education with a more conservative person at the helm. And I thought, maybe not this time, but maybe next time, maybe a conservative will come forward. And now with all the discussion about Common Core and what DPI did to enact that without really any legislative oversight or much public input, I think that only proves some of the thinking that goes on at DPI, that maybe they're not involving the public as much as they should, and the public may not be buying into some of the things that they're doing for education. And then you get into a whole other list of things that government seems to be intruding upon, and education is taken very, very seriously by a great many people in the state of Wisconsin. It's their own kids, and they're very worried about not only what they're taught, but how they're taught, and some of the things that are brought into the classroom that they may not agree with, that they feel they have very little power to change.
Well, a follow-up on Common Core. Who should be the final one to rule on Common Core standards? Should it be elected officials in the Assembly and Senate?
Well, no, it should be the local school board should still have the ultimate decision. But that decision should be based upon the best knowledge that we can provide for them. Common Core, in my opinion, is really a bottom level of curriculum that are standards that we should be adopting. And many schools, I believe, will exceed the standards that Common Core offers. What I was most fearful of was the fact that if parents were sold Common Core as a more of a ceiling, that if their kids went to a school that followed Common Core to the letter, that their child would be ready for college or maybe some Ivy League school out there somewhere, but that's not the case. I believe that Common Core may provide a good basic education for kids coming out of high school if they want to go directly into the workforce. Mm-hmm. That I believe is a competency that could be achieved by Common Core. But anything beyond above and beyond that, even a tech school, requires additional and higher level levels of standards to achieve that enrollment. So that was my main fear, yeah. That Common Core would be looked at as some grandiose savior to our education system. But what we have to realize too is that Wisconsin hasn't upgraded their standards since 1998, and that was the key, I guess, to why it was so acceptable and why DPI looked at this as a way out, I guess, of not having to answer that question as to why you haven't been improving standards all along, and why all of a sudden are we jumping on the Common Core bandwagon.
Since you worked so hard on K-12 issues and ran for DPI superintendent, this question: if you could wave a wand and fix Milwaukee Public Schools, how would you fix it?
Well, I'm actually looking at some fixes right now. I am chair of the Urban Education Committee. We're still technically can call committee hearings and whatnot. I think something really needs to be done to shake up the system. All things I've seen, you know, we've seen superintendents come in, they'll spend 4 or 5 years here. They get frustrated because they can't get anything through the Milwaukee School Board. They can't really do much with the central office. Mm-hmm. And the programs that they've initiated really is just kind of nibbling at the edges of the problems and not really going after it. So I think we have to do something more earth-shaking. I think something like maybe dividing the MPS into smaller districts.
Smaller districts.
Would help.
That's been talked about. Former Governor Thompson talked about that. It didn't get any traction in the Capitol, but excuse me, I
well, maybe now is the time. You know, okay. Good ideas sometimes are hatched much earlier on, and it takes 5, 10, 15 years for more people to realize that, hey, maybe we should do this. I think there is an optimum district school size, just like there is an probably some optimum population in individual schools, just based upon the efficiency operations. And I think MPS, if it was done correctly, could be divided up so that not only would there be more competition between schools and districts, but you'd be able to break up the monopoly of the school boards, and I think you'd get more ideas, more fresh ideas, and less bureaucracy. We wouldn't need the central office. We could pass down to principals instead of principals. Now I believe are being mostly there to discuss problems with individual students that are causing problems in the class. Mm-hmm. They're not really dealing with curriculum or how can we do a better job in getting teachers trained and you know, getting a better education in the classroom. It's more discipline problems, and if we allowed them more authority, we give them all the responsibility but very little authority, the way things work in MPS, that if we could flip that around, I think that would have a big impact on how well the MPS does.
One thing in your personal bio has always intrigued me. You have to be the only legislator with 4 patents. What can you give us a short summary of what patents you achieved?
Well, sure. I worked for Johnson Controls and Badger Meter as an electronics engineer. So I was given various tasks, You know, they always tell you, well, here's what we want the product to do. Now it's your job to figure out how we can accomplish that. So one of the first patents I had involved a technology that, and this is happening quite a bit now in the electronics world, of transmitting data over power lines. And the idea of this product when I worked for Johnson Control was to control individual room air conditioning and heat. When a room was not occupied, you didn't need those functions and you could turn them off down by the registration desk just by typing in the number of the room.
Oh.
So you could theoretically energy manage the building much more efficiently by doing that. And this little console sat on the desk at the registration office, and when somebody would check into a room, they just punch the numbers in and that would turn
light
on.
Light and air come on.
Right, it'll all come on before the guest actually came to the room, so he wouldn't have to turn it on and off himself. So it just seemed to be a good fit for Johnson Controls at the time. And
so that's one. Can you give us a quick summary of a couple of the others?
The second patent was a security system. It was a non-predictable digital code that you could put over, like a supervisory signal over two pair of conductors, so that if you wanted to secure these two conductors, you could do it in such a way that somebody couldn't cut the wires and then repeat the digital code that was on the wires if they were trying to somehow break into the system.
Okay.
So we figured out a way to do that. It actually is a repetitive system, but it repeats over such a long period of time that nobody could really figure out how to do it.
Right.
So that was number two.
Number three?
Number three. Also at Johnson Controls, we developed a security system that worked on a Doppler, the Doppler effect. And you'd have to know a little bit more about an impact diode, but it worked at X-band frequencies. And the trick of the whole system was that we used that same diode that was the generator of the wave that went out to see if there was any movement in the room.
Oh.
Any time there's movement, you'll get a frequency shift in the oscillator, a frequency that's sent out. Well, not only did this device pick up that shift in frequency, but because of the diode effect, we could also take that signal off the diode as an analog signal difference. So we eliminated a major component in this oscillator by using that internal diode effect.
Wow.
To take the signal off. So we could tell by the amplitude of the signal roughly how big the object was and how far away it was.
So, well, that's three. That's number three. Four?
Okay, number four was a type of security when I worked at Badger Meter. I first developed an RF system that sat on top of the water meter that you could walk or drive down the street and be able to read people's meters from the street. You wouldn't have to
get out of the vehicle and eyeball it.
In Milwaukee especially, there a lot of the meters are in the basement and you'd have to physically go down there and take a reading. There was a lot of human error involved in that type of system. So we developed this RF box, but putting an RF box, you have to connect it to the meter.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves two leads typically coming up from the meter going to the box, because the box has to record the reading, and it has to be identical. The electronic reading has to be identical to the mechanical reading on the meter. You can't even lose 1 gallon of water with the system, so it had to be very accurate and very secure, because you didn't want the customer to come down and cut the wire and draw water or gas or electricity for that matter,
energy,
for a month at a time and then connect the wires back up and get that free use.
Wow.
So we developed the way the system worked is that for every 100 gallons or every gallon, depending upon the resolution of the meter, would send out a pulse, and that pulse had to be at least 6 milliseconds long. Okay, so we developed a circuit that reversed the polarity of the wires for 4 milliseconds. And then we got the feedback. Again, there was a diode on the other end of these wires. And if that diode was, by cutting the wires, that diode wouldn't be there anymore. So during that 4 millisecond time, if we didn't get that signal coming back,
something's wrong.
We knew the wires were cut.
Something's wrong.
So that set off an alarm, a tamper alarm.
That's fascinating, from science to politics. Maybe a final question.
Sure.
Is there a message in the retirement of the Congressman Petri, Senator Ellis, Senator Schultz, Steve Castell? Is the party going through any generational change, do you think, Representative?
Well, I think it has. There seems to be, I won't call it partisanship. I mean, we still get along, I think, very well with the Democrats. Probably 85 or 90% of the legislation that we pass is bipartisan. What gets on the news, though, is the 5 or 10% that we disagree on.
And conflict.
That seems to be, hammered home on the news. So, but I do think probably the best indication of this is if you look at the resolutions that come out of the state conventions. I think if you compare them, you'll see that the trend is that the Republicans are going a little more conservative, mm-hmm. and the Democrats, I believe, have gone way off to the left, and that creates more of a friction between the two-party system.
So, I see. That's a pretty healthy debate.
It's healthy, but I think it gives people a much more clear direction on where candidates are coming from.
Very good.
And there are issues that I've been able to work with Democrats on that are bipartisan, but there are constituencies out there that are support groups. When you think of the Democrats, you usually think of unions. When you think of Republicans, you think about businesses.
Business.
And, those are always going to be conflicting or opposite in their way of thinking. So as long as you have that much influence by those outside groups on people who run for office and the legislation that's brought forward, then we're always going to see this type of back and forth. So,
Very good. Representative Don Pridemore, congratulations on your 5 terms, and thanks for sitting down with Wisconsin Eye.
All right, my pleasure.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.